स्वागत है आप सबका चर्चा इन ब्लैक होल में, एंड दिस इज आवर सेकंड पार्ट ऑफ द कॉन्वर्सेशन विद हर्ष, ए के ए लाइफ मैथ मनी। इफ यू वांट टू सी द फर्स्ट पार्ट, यू कैन जस्ट क्लिक राइट हियर। नाउ इन दिस कॉन्वर्सेशन वी आस्क हर्ष टू एक्सप्लेन सम ऑफ चीज, बिकॉज द थिंग इज 280 कैरेक्टर ट्वीट कैन नॉट एक्सप्लेन एनी आइडिया प्रॉपरली, बिकॉज यू कैन ईजिली परसिव इट एज कॉन्ट्रोवर्शियल बिकॉज इट कैन बी ईजिली टेकन आउट ऑफ कॉन्टेक्स्ट, एंड वी आर नॉट इंटरेस्टेड इन द 280 कैरेक्टर ट्वीट, वी आर इंटरेस्टेड इन द स्टोरी बिहाइंड इट, एंड दैट लेड अस टू
That led us to talk about some of the tweets on men, women, life, marriage, and kids. And it was a kind of fun understanding the reasoning behind the tweets he has and why does he think the way he thinks. And this sort of challenged some of our ideas, but we hope this also challenges some of yours.
Now enjoy the podcast. Now the question is, like, you said something about the Twitter thing, like how to because you know how to handle like hate properly. And you said something like Twitter rewards you for being an asshole.
It does. What do you mean by that?
If I was to say something, see, you can say the same thing in many ways, right? Mm-hmm. And there is a polite way of saying it, a slightly aggressive way of saying it. And Twitter is a platform where if you're saying something aggressively, it is more likely to be noticed, more likely to be retweeted, and more likely that more and more people will see it, which kind of makes it a platform where if you are smart, you will tend to be more aggressive.
Yep.
Because if you are not aggressive, no one is going to see you. And at the end of the day, the victory is that more and more people notice you, people follow you, etc. So Twitter tends to bring the more savage parts of your personality out. In the sense that in real life, like for example, in real life, let's say I don't like someone. I'm not going to say, okay, shut up, man, you're fat. I don't care about your opinions. Like I'm going to be like, I'm just going to say, yeah, okay. And I'm going to ignore him maybe. But on Twitter, I'm going to say, okay, you're fat, get out of here. And on Twitter, that really works. So it's a part of the game, you could say. Like, don't hate the player, you know, hate the game. I didn't make Twitter. I just do what works.
I think I have this question. Like, so are you like this person on like outside world as well? Like very brutal about your opinions and anything?
So on Twitter, all the opinions you see are true. They're my opinions. But
they're true.
Over time, I'm very savvy sometimes where just because I know something, I can tell them, I don't tell them because of the fact that it's just not going to be useful for them. In the sense that if you have something to say, but the other person has not asked you, and what you're telling them is not something they want to do, or it's something negative or some kind of criticism, they're not going to follow you. In the sense, they're not going to like listen to you and be like, okay, I'm going to change my life now because you told me something. That's not going to happen. So typically, if you're savvy, you will just keep your mouth shut and, you know, let them live their life in peace. So I think it would be a mistake to be your brand on Twitter in real life, because in real life, people will think you're a mean asshole and you're like hurting their feelings, etc. And your goal is not to hurt their feelings, right? You know, even on Twitter, my goal is not to hurt people's feelings. My goal is to help people. It just so happens that a certain way of writing tends to work really, really well on Twitter. But in real life, doing that, being rude and hurtful to people has no advantage. Like if I'm like, you know, like X person is like that, come on, man, you have like a flat head or whatever, you know, like any rude thing, that would bring me no benefit whatsoever, ever in my life. To be unnecessarily rude to someone. So why would I do it? And back in my teenage years, like back when I was less adroit, I would be like that and I would get burned left and right. Like, you know, people would not like me and they would think I'm an asshole. And it's something you learn to tone down with experience.
It's so funny ki like, अगर हम किसी को रियल लाइफ में जाके ऐसे अनसोलिसिटेड एडवाइस दे, दे जस्ट वोंट लिसन टू अस, बट ऑन ट्विटर व्हेन यू गिव इट लाइक पीपल गेट लाइक मैड, यू आर सेइंग समथिंग दे डोंट वांट टू हियर,
इवन नॉट डायरेक्टली लाइक जस्ट ट्वीट.
आई विल से दैट पीपल डोंट गेट मैड पर से. व्हाट हैपेंस इज दैट योर ओन ऑडियंस, ओके, द पीपल हु फॉलो यू, दे डोंट गेट मैड. इट्स जस्ट पीपल हु डोंट फॉलो यू, हु हैव नो इंटरेस्ट इन यू, दे डोंट केयर अबाउट यू, दे नेवर रीड योर कंटेंट, दे विल ट्राई टू, यू नो, tell you, you can't write this, you can't say that, etc. It's like, lady, you had no interest in me ever in my entire life. Why am I going to listen to you? So the people who follow you and actually care about your well-being and what you're saying, they don't get mad. It's just the people who don't care about you, who are people who like, who never even heard of you before, They seem to think that they can dictate what you can and can't say, and it's just how people are. And of course, you know, we also have a segment of population that's offended about every single thing. So that's more of their problem.
True.
They're just like, they don't have any work to do in life. So,
yeah.
So if you're on Twitter only, I have like this tweet you put out, like, dumb women have careers, smart women don't need them. And okay, on the first note, like, okay, it's really like polarizing, I would say. Like, what's the context behind what you said, like, in this?
Also, does it also apply to men? Is my question, because I mean, it could apply probably.
See, it's a bit of a joke because when I say, like, you know, dumb women have careers, I don't mean entrepreneurs. Okay, I think if a woman is entrepreneur, that's really really good. But a woman who's working a corporate job, you know, she thinks she's free, right? You know, like, we've achieved the freedom to work, but what are you doing at work? Like, you're just listening to other people. Is that being free? It's not. Mm-hmm. Like, if you go to your job and you do what your boss says, you're not free. Mm-hmm. You're just working for someone else. Like, earlier you were working for your household, and now you're working for someone else. And the joke is that if you're a smart woman, you know, you won't have to do this. Like, you'll find a guy who will do the work for you. Like, you will not have to work. But you'll have a guy who will do all the work for you, and you get the benefits. But if you're a dumb woman, you'll do the work yourself. Mm-hmm. Because now you have to go to the job, you have to listen to other people, work 8 to 10 hours, and then come back home. So if I could find a solution where I don't have to do anything, and I can, like, you know, just live a great life and, you know, just look out, like, you know, cook for 1 hour a day, I would probably take it. You don't know. Maybe I would. I don't know. The point
So hypothetically, if Harsh was a girl, you would not have a business. You would just marry a rich guy.
I would just marry a rich guy. Why would I do anything?
Crazy.
But like, you made this separation. Like, you're not talking about entrepreneurs. Like, but like, why that separation?
I think entrepreneurship is something that should be promoted everywhere. Of course, I have like a social agenda, you could say here. But I will say that. See, I don't think that there's anyone who's happy doing no work, even women. Okay, like, if she's doing nothing, she's going to be really unhappy, if she's smart at least, because, you know, there is zero intellectual stimulation there, especially if you don't have any kids. So, and when you're working for a corporate employer, it's very frustrating, right? Again, it's like, it's an unhappy life because you're just listening to other people's orders, you're going out of your house 10, 12 hours a day. And when you're tired, when you're home, and, you know, you can't, like, focus on your children, family, etc. So working for a corporate employer is also an unhappy life. And I know lots of women who do that and they're not happy. So I have proof. So what is the other alternative where you can work and still, you know, have a good home life? That's entrepreneurship. Where an entrepreneur can choose, okay, I'm going to work 3-4 hours a day. And the rest of the time, I'm going to, like, look after my family and do what I want. And that is freedom you only have as an entrepreneur. And I think that's a good thing. Plus, it also brings more money in for the household. And you get to, you know, you're not just dependent, right? Like, if things so happen that, say, your husband dies or leaves you or something like that, if you are an entrepreneur, you can kind of support yourself, you know, pay for your children's education, etc. So you are not completely dependent on someone. So entrepreneurship is something that's really valuable, especially for a woman. But working a corporate job is a huge mistake from a female perspective because it takes away all of your most fertile years and all of your energy, and then you're just left high and dry when you're old, right?
Okay. And you said one thing in between that really piqued my curiosity, like, children's provide intellectual stimulation?
Actually, they do, in the sense that if you are, okay, let's say that I don't know if you've been around children or not, but it's very hard to be bored around a kid.
True,
they keep entertaining you can keep talking to it. So they're simulating your mind, right? That's why you're not bored. But if you are just watching TV or doing something, like, you know, just sitting back watching TV, at some point you just get annoyed at it. Like, come on, man, I just spent so long watching this video and now I'm bored and there's nothing I can do. So you need, like, all smart people need some amount of intellectual stimulation, either from their work or from their family. And if the husband is going out to work, he's not working from home, you also need some intellectual stimulation. And even if the husband is there, like, you can't talk to one person all day. So being a businessman, I think there is only advantages to it. I don't see big disadvantages to it. Besides, you also learn more about the world, and it gives you more skills, more confidence and everything. So I am supportive of all entrepreneurs, male or female.
I have a, since we talked about mentioned kids, there is this one, I think Q&A you did in a podcast with Armani, and the guy is like, he's successful, he's making money, he's fit, but for some reason he does not seem happy or at peace. And you replied immediately, he probably does not have kids, or he probably is not married. So what, well, why do you think kids play such an important role? I mean, obviously we know that Jordan Peterson says a lot that they provide meaning and all, but what is your thing for it? Why do you think it is important to have a marriage and kids?
What is the only thing that's common between the first few people on earth and over millions of generations today, you, what is the only common thing?
They all had kids.
Exactly. It's in your DNA. Like, you are biologically wired to want to have kids. And that is, at least I think so, the only biological purpose we have in life is to have kids and make sure that they survive. And that's kind of what a lot of people feel when they feel a void in their life, especially if they have money. Like, if you have money, you're living a comfortable life, but you still feel a void. It's, some desire is unfulfilled. And what's the deepest, most desire, the desire that's built into our DNA, it's to breed, it's to have children. And I will say that's common across all of humanity. And a large part of why people tend to feel the void, you know, they feel empty inside despite having money, is because they don't have kids. And I, there is some confirmation to this, because a lot of these people will purchase a pet. They will like buy a dog or something. And it'll immediately make them feel better, because the pet is acting like a surrogate child.
I've heard of this thing where, you know, couples buy a dog or a pet before just to see if they can handle the baby. So, you know, just test like a probation period. If they can handle a dog, they can also handle a baby with me. So
I think that most couples can handle a baby, like, in the sense that, at least in my family, I can say that everyone's married, they all have kids, and no one has had to buy a dog yet. But I think in a Western context, it makes more sense, because here in the West, a lot of people are divorced, and they're the societal system is a bit of a mess right now.
I think you talk about this also a lot, and I think you just mentioned that, you know, in your family, I think there was one love marriage, and they're the only couple who got divorced.
Exactly, only one.
I think you mentioned that now, as we go on in the modern world, I mean, there are two. I mean, there's one tweet I want to ask about, but since we're on the same line, you mentioned that it's hard to get arranged marriage now because we have a lot of variables in life. It's better to get a love marriage to understand the person and then marry the person, rather than going on arranged marriage. So why did you say that? I mean, we just need some understanding.
So in cities, at least, and this may or may not apply to villages, but in cities, we have a lot of exposure for both men and women, okay? And let's say that you get an arranged marriage. How often, how many times do you meet a girl before you marry in an arranged marriage system? Maybe
once,
five.
Once, twice.
A couple of times,
Yeah.
So, and we know that she has had just as much exposure to the outside world as you have. So I'm sure that you have friends who have like a drug addiction or drinking problems or cigarette issues. Everyone does. Like, this is not uncommon now. And how do you know for sure, or even like get a reasonable amount of certainty that this is not the case with the person you're marrying? Let's say, how would you know that she was not a whore before? How would you know that she doesn't have a drinking problem? How do you know she's not addicted to drugs? You just can't. And in fact, I can give you evidence of this, in the sense, I've like been with women who look completely normal on the outside, but once you start getting to know them, you're like, okay, so they secretly smoke at their house. They also do cannabis, which is called weed. And, you know, they're a bit of a whore. But in an arranged marriage system, how do you know that? Like, you can't tell, right? You can't look at someone's face and be like, okay, this girl is someone I should marry, and this one has bad habits. Like, you can't make that difference.
At least not in modern, like in cities or somewhere. Maybe previously it was possible earlier.
I mean, if you have really good social skills and you can meet the girl at least like 7 to 10 times, you can be reasonably sure. But if you're meeting her once, you just can't tell because it's just not possible. Like, no matter, like, people can put on a face for some time and you need time to peel off that advertising label they have on themselves. And you don't get that. And that can happen with you too, right? Like, for example, if you are someone, Mitesh, let's say that you have, you know, a cocaine addiction. Will you go and in an arrangement system tell the girl I am addicted to cocaine?
In the first meeting, second meeting, I don't think so. I'll just hide it.
You'll just hide it, right?
Yeah.
She doesn't need to know.
She won't need to know. And she won't know. And then after you're married, she's going to find out because, you know, you live in the same house together. So, we have
why do we have sugar in our cupboard?
Gaadi mein ghaas kyun padi thi?
So, okay. It's something that you just can't tell nowadays. Like, nowadays we have so much exposure to a lot of different things and the risks are higher. Like, earlier, okay, let's say when my mother got married, my mother was married at a younger age, like as an adult, but like, you know, in her like late teens, like I think 19 or 20. So this was a time where everyone lived in villages and there was no real exposure to the outside world as such. So you could be sure that okay, so if I marry a girl, she's likely to be normal, think like me, have the same culture as me. 99% of the times that would be true. But that is no longer the case today. Today you meet someone, they're completely different, right? Like someone is like they have some issues or they get angry a lot. And that is something that takes you a while to like understand if this person has any huge character or personality flaws. Because the percentage of people with flaws is much, much higher. Like the tail risk is higher. So I would say if possible, you should meet the girl or guy enough number of times to actually get to know them and to gain their trust and to actually understand what they want out of life and what they don't. Because like there are girls today who don't want to have children. And if you don't meet them enough, you will not really find that out.
Not something I want to find after I get married 5 years
later. Exactly. I also, remember this checking once and there was this couple, okay, like, you know, maybe like a couple of years elder than me. So maybe they were like 28 or something. And the guy was telling the girl, okay, like, nahi, paida karna tera kaam hai. Uske baad hum dekh lenge, tension mat lete. Like, she was trying to convince the girl to have a kid. Like, he was trying to convince the girl to have a kid. But how did he get in that situation? The reason he got in that situation was that he didn't ask, he didn't know this before he got married, right?
True.
Like, this was a new marriage. Like, they had the mehndi and everything on their hands. And they were out on this trek. And this guy, had he known this girl somewhat more, he would not have married.
Probably not married. Crazy.
In between all this, like, it's important. Like, the girl you are going to choose and the decision of having children is important. Because according to science as well, happiness is directly proportional to the quality of relationships you have. And that is, like, the most intimate relationship you are going to have in life, both in children and wife. So
the biggest decision you will ever make as a man in your entire life is who you marry. So I'm not saying that arranged marriages are bad or anything. I'm just saying that if you have the option, it makes more sense to get to know the girl a bit in the present scenario
before the marriage. You have this one tweet which is very controversial, I would say, and
everything else is controversial. Everyone's supposed
to say. I mean, at least to us, I mean, some of your tweets are not controversial, even if they're controversial by normal standards. But this one was, and it says that if you want to avoid a lot of bullshit in your life, don't marry a modern woman. So, what does that mean? What does a modern woman mean? Why should I avoid
modern means?
Modern. When I say modern, I mean a girl who thinks that she's a guy, in the sense that she does not understand that men and women complement each other, in the sense that the guy provides certain things and the girl provides certain things. For example, you know, the guy provides money, finances, and, you know, what do you call it?
Security.
Order, authority, security to the house. And the girl provides nurturing, children, I look after you, etc. So there are two different elements, you know, yin and yang, and they combine together to form the entire thing. What a modern woman thinks, you know, when I say modern, I mean the type of woman who thinks that this is not the case. The men and women provide the same things and they are somehow like 50-50 business partners in this relationship. For example, she will think that, okay, I make money, the guy makes money, we both make money. Mm-hmm. I look after the kid. The guy looks after the kid. We both look after the kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I cook. He cooks. We both cook. I do housework. He does housework. We both do housework. And mm-hmm. then you have to ask, like, why would a guy do this? Like, what am I getting that I don't have? I'm doing the same things I was doing earlier, and you're doing the same things you were doing earlier. Why do we need each other? So it doesn't. I think that modern women, or I would say the women who grew up in this more feminist culture, they mm-hmm. don't understand the yin and yang aspect of
mm-hmm.
you know, a household where certain things are provided mm-hmm. by one person and certain things are provided by the other, and they want the same things to be provided by, you know, they want it to be such that this, you have, like, I'll give you an analogy, okay? Mm-hmm. Let's say you have two rotis, but you don't have sabzi.
Okay.
Like,
you just it won't work out.
It won't be as good, right? Like, you need both the things. You need the sabzi and the roti. You can't just have a lot of rotis and not have the sabzi, or just have mm-hmm. a lot of sabzi and not have the roti. Like, the dish is incomplete.
Mm-hmm.
So a modern woman is someone who thinks she's a guy and she wants to live as if she's mm-hmm. a guy. So that doesn't work out. Like, the household doesn't function as efficiently. The dish was not as good. Now you're just eating by force. This is not something that's pleasurable or something that both parties are enjoying as much.
Mm-hmm.
It's simply a question of ego, right? Like, even the most feminist girl, she wants to be dominated in bed. It's just how it is. You know, so it's a part of her DNA.
We are not going to say
that escalated very quickly.
What I'm saying is that it's in the male nature to want to conquer, and it's in the female nature to be want to conquer by a guy she respects. And of course, if she doesn't respect it, then they shouldn't be married. But my point is that a modern woman doesn't understand this dynamic. She doesn't want to play by it, and that's her choice. But if a man wants to be happy and he wants to have a happy, you know, stable relationship, it does not make sense to marry a modern woman, especially when you can get better options.
And what is better options? What do you mean by better options? A traditional woman?
A traditional woman who understands that, you know, she provides support, the man provides stability, and things go well together that way. Who doesn't compete with you, who is, like, complimenting you, but he isn't, like, she understands that she's a woman, and she understands that you're a man, and you understand that she's a woman. So, for example, mm-hmm. you understand that she has her own emotions and you're supposed to handle that. And mm-hmm. she understands that, you know, you're a guy and you have your sense of authority, and she respects it. And that tends to do better over time versus the current, you know, the modern system of, you know, you both, you know, acting mm-hmm. like it's a 50-50 partnership. It just, in my opinion, at least, it just is a better system to marry a traditional woman. Like, these traditional ideas, they were around for so long for a reason.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Even if we take out the, like, the gender roles part, like, it's a, like, our relationship is supposed to be, like, complementary, not competitive, like, even in the most general sense.
See, a lot of people tend to take offense at the idea of, sorry to cut you off, but since you mentioned mm-hmm. the term, a lot of mm-hmm. people take idea, you know, they get offended by the term gender roles, right? They're like, no, how dare you say that women should be like this? Women can be like this too. I mean, you can be, but, like, why is it that things are structured this way? For example, let's say that a woman provides, okay, let's say you have a guy who does the woman's job, like, you know, traditionally the woman's job, that is to look after the household and raise kids, etc. And you have the woman who is the primary source of income for the house. Okay, mm-hmm. Let's give that scenario. What happens when the woman gets pregnant? So do you guys just starve? Because the guy is not working and the woman is pregnant, so she can't work.
Mm-hmm.
So you just starve, right? Like, you starve to death.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason the system exists is because women make the children.
Mm-hmm.
So they look after the children and they stay at home longer. And since women are continuously working, they will have more pay. They will not have, like, breaks in their, you know, career, you could say.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not against mm-hmm. the idea of women working. I'm just against the idea mm-hmm. where you could say everyone's providing the same things. Like, you're just, like, a business partner then. Like, you're both providing the exact same things to the household, and mm-hmm. what none of you are providing is just completely missing.
Even in a business, you need to complement, like, not, like, if 2% are mm-hmm. doing the same thing, then what's the point?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work, right? This is just fundamental, you could say. But a lot mm-hmm. of people just don't understand it, or have been brainwashed into not wanting to understand mm-hmm. it, or it becomes like an ego issue where I will say that it's become like a situation where women, at least the modern woman, has been brainwashed into thinking that it's bad to be a woman and it's something it's good to be a man, in the sense that if a woman is working, it would be something that a modern woman would look up to. But if a woman is a housewife, she would like look down upon her and call her a servant or something.
Makes sense.
So who is the one who is actually a misogynist? Like the person who is hating a woman for wanting to be a woman? Or that's, I think feminism is like, you know, when they accuse everyone of being a misogynist, like feminism is the truest form of misogyny. You're like, you're hating a woman for wanting to be a woman. Like that's as as definition of the term as it comes.
I will play devil's advocate here, because I don't want my opinions to be out there. So what I would say be like, okay, there was some gender roles according to the situation past. Like whenever I see feminism, I don't see it as a man versus woman thing. I see it as a generational difference, I can say. Like, okay, past we had roles. You can say we didn't have computer jobs. We had jobs like which need actual physical toughness, and obviously men are more built for that. Like you can't deny that. Like that's the basic. And women were supposed to win. So that were the gender roles there. But now that the situation has changed, the gender roles are supposed to change, or maybe like, so I'm just saying like maybe that's a possibility. You're saying that's not a possibility. Like, okay.
No, I understand your question. Your question is that essentially, since we no longer have a situation where, you know, working involves physical labor and working is mostly intellectual, women can do it also.
Yeah, like a woman can be a coder too, basically.
Yeah, she can be, and she should be if she wants to be. My point is that if you are a woman, I'm going to first give you an axiom, okay? Something I believe to be true. And it's that I think that most women are happier when they have children. In the sense that if you look at a 35-year-old woman who doesn't have children, there are chances that, you know, the percentage of women who are unhappy and because of not having children is much, much higher than the percentage of women who are unhappy because of having kids. So girls who tend to have like a power career, right, where they're working for a corporate employer all day, they are much, much, much more likely to never have kids. Like this is something that I'm not making up. This is statistics, and you can go into any big company
because it's not good for a career if you take a, you know,
yeah, if you take a couple of years off, and a lot of women, a lot of women will like just you know think that okay, I'm gonna have, you know, some medical procedure, like I'll freeze my eggs, I'll have kids when I'm 40, and it doesn't work that way, right? So I will say that despite jobs being intellectual, people when they have a high power career, especially women, they typically tend to miss out on the family experience and of, you know, having kids. And unlike a man who can have kids at any age, a woman has a certain period where she has the most amount of fertility. And let's say she wants to have two children or three children or four children. Like in India, it's, you know, nowadays people only have two kids. So let's go with that. Let's say she wants to have two children. So if you run the math, it's healthiest for a woman to have a kid before 30. So let's say she has back-to-back children. Let's say one at 29 and one at 28. Now, do you want to have kids right after getting married? Probably not. So maybe you want to be married for 2 years before you have kids. So the math says that even if you want to have kids back-to-back, you have to be married at 26. How many 26-year-old career women do you know are married? Very, very few. So women can do any career today that that requires intellect. No one is doubting that. But my main advice to women is that don't sacrifice your family life and your, you know, your desire to want to have kids just to make some extra money. You can always have a career later. Like you can start your career at even 35 and still be fine. But if you like postpone your children to like, you know, I'm going to get married after I'm 30, then I'm going to have kids, like you're going to have a lot of problems. Like it might turn out that you might not be able to have kids, or you might just struggle to find a guy. Like a lot of women I know who are older, they are 30, they make a lot of money. And what happens to women who make a lot of money is that they want a guy who makes even more money. But because they already have, you know, a strong career going, they're making so much money that the percentage of guys who make...
The pool is very small.
The pool is very small. And to top it off, the pool wants younger women, because as guys, we are wired to want women who are like 21, 22, 23. Like you know, there are studies which show that we find like 20-year-olds to be the prettiest across the board. Like even an 80-year-old guy will say that a 20-year-old girl is the hottest. But women are not that way. Women tend to be like, you know, if you ask a 40-year-old woman who is the hottest looking guy, she'll say like around 40, 41 years old, etc. So women tend to be linear according to their age, like in preference for guys. So the pool they have is very small, and the pool wants something else altogether. They don't want a 30-year-old, 35-year-old girl. So it becomes really hard for them to marry. And, you know, so there are too many challenges here. Like first, it's hard to get married. Then it's hard to have kids. You might have to use medical procedures to assist, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a harrowing life, because at the end of the day, our DNA is wired in such a way that we want to have kids. Like across, you know, our billions of generations, everyone has had kids. That's why we're here. And now suddenly you are going to fight this desire for the rest of your life. And there is absolutely nothing you can do. Now you're screwed for the rest of your life, right? So I will say that it doesn't make sense for women to work like work in a high power career situation. I think that some kind of entrepreneurship situation works best for women, where they can have their household and still do some work. Because at the end of the day, you have to understand the priority. The priority is not that I work for the sake of work. You don't work because working is something that is like the most pleasurable thing on earth. You work so that you can live a great life. And in most women's cases, a great life means having a husband and children. Now, whatever setup that might be, even the most modern woman, you know, even if she wants to be a guy, she still wants a husband, right? Or and kids, probably. So this is just how it is. It just, the setup where a woman is working 10 hours for someone else, it just isn't compatible with a happy family life. And there are women who can do it. You know, some women can do it. Some people can. But I mean, in general, it's not possible. Like if I was working 12 hours a day and I'm like coming home after that, then I also have to spend some energy with my husband and I have kids also. Like that would be really draining on me. Like I would go crazy in a month. So it is not... It's not the ideal situation. You're not a robot.
If we take the axiom ki like, okay, women want to have children, then it just mathematically doesn't make sense at all.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense at all. And I will say my axiom is pretty much true for like 99% of women. Like, there's very few women who don't want to have kids.
I think we'll probably test this more idea when we get more female guests. Because, you know, we should not be feel like, you know, men are sitting and talking about women. What should women
do? I don't know. I identify as a woman, so. I've been doing that for like a long time. I'm surprised it's news to you. But my point is that even women, like, I think most women will agree to you. Like, if you ask your mother, what's more important, like me or, some career, she'll say you. And I think the vast majority of women is... They care about the children more than anything else. Like they would give their lives for the children.
True.
So they clearly care about it. And women who don't care about it, they say, I don't want to have kids. In my experience, at least, most of them change their mind when they get older.
Probably they're too late for that.
Sometimes it's too late for that. Like I actually, I've met women who were like, you know, not like feeling the best and they were actually crying about it. And so it's just too late, right? Like if you're like 20, 37, it's too late. Like now
it's done.
Yeah, it's way too late. The chances are really low. Like it's, I mean, nothing is impossible, but it's really, really low chance that, you know, you'll have a kid and get married, etc. The happy life, that thing is gone. And typically these women also had the same thought, right? You know, why do I need a guy? I can like just travel here and there and, you know, make a lot of money, etc. And people will look up to me. But you get bored of traveling. You get bored of your career also. And at the end of the day, you end up in a void and you are just stuck because unlike a guy who can have kids at any age, you can't. It's just a fact of life. Right? I don't hate women. I'm just telling you, like, this is how it is. God made it so. And if you want to live a happy life, if that is your goal, it just does not make sense to sacrifice your entire 20s on making money.
Or we have to put it in another way. Don't go against the gods.
You could say that. Don't go against God. See, the thing is that it's right now, the societal structure is such that women tend to think that working is done for the sake of work, where they are working, but they think that work itself is an achievement. But that is not the case, right? Work is supposed to pay for your life. It is not supposed to become your life.
It's part of your life, basically.
Yeah, it's part of your life. See, when you are in a car, you are using the car to go from place A to place B.
Yeah, you don't go
to the car to stay in the car.
Makes sense.
We have a lot of questions. And
well, I just have...
Feel free to ask them.
One important question, which I think we wanted to ask, ye miss nahi karna hai. Since you have a lot of, I think, I would say, ideas since like we were younger, are some opinions that have changed over time that, you know, you believe that earlier, but you don't believe them anymore?
There are a lot of opinions like that, actually. Is there any particular niche you're looking for, like women, business?
I mean, let's go with women and men, probably. Or life.
Okay, so earlier, I used to think that, you know, women will not make great businessmen. Like, I used to think, okay, they're like too emotional and they would like, they would really suck at business. That was my idea. And I've had, I think about two business partners I have are female. And I've learned that this is not true, in the sense that women actually make good businessmen. They just tend to make good businessmen in situations where you don't have to take extreme risks. In the sense that women are less likely to have extremely, you know, absurd goals, in the sense that, you know, a guy will say something like, you know, my business is going to grow 40% a month on month and we'll be doing millions by next 2 years. And women tend to have like more reasonable projections.
Conservative, maybe.
Yeah, more, they're more reasonable when it comes to projecting things. Okay. And in fact, there are studies that show that men tend to like do the most accounting scandals. And that's simply because of the fact that we come up with the highest, what do you call it? Like, you know, expectations of growth. And then when they're not met, we kind of like, you know, fudge the books.
Yeah.
So I will say that women make good businessmen, but they don't, they perform the best when the business does not have a lot of risk. Because when the business has a lot of risk and they are expected to be really bold, they tend to, they have a natural tendency to have more emotions than men, and they seem to get the best of them. Like, the reason why women are more emotional than men is simply because over time, women have always, they have to take care of the kid and they have to understand what the kid is feeling. So they are like way more sensitive to emotions than men are.
That's why they like dogs more.
Oh, is that the case?
Yeah.
So that is something I changed my mind on. That is something that I was wrong about. And there are lots of things like that. Like, especially in business, I've learned a lot of things I was wrong about.
Got it. What about business in general? Like, what did you feel you were wrong about?
So the biggest thing I think I was wrong about in business was that earlier I used to think that it's about the entrepreneur, right? Like, you know, if you're a good businessman, you will make a lot of money. And if you're a bad businessman, you... But while that being true, I now think a lot really depends on which business you are in. For example, you can be a great businessman, but if the business itself is really shitty, let's say that you're selling snow to people who live in Alaska, you're not going to be very rich. You know, there's a story, from this book called, I think it's called Ogilvy on Advertisement or The Boron Letters. I think it's from The Boron Letters. And it's something like, what is the one thing you want most in a business? What you want most is a starving audience. Like, for example, if you are running a hot dog stand and you're running it in a school, you know, and the school kids have a lunch break after 4 or 5 hours of studying, they're going to buy a hot dog, even if it sucks. So the most important thing you want is a starving audience, and your business itself determines how much you will grow, in the sense that, if you're a reasonably good businessman, it really doesn't matter if you're excellent or not. It matters that you pick the right business, because if you pick some bad business, then no matter how good you are, you're just not going to do so well. So a lot of things are really out of your hands. You know, they're like, if you pick the right business and you are at the right time, you're going to do really, really well. I'll give you like an example. Okay. Let's say that the gold rush is happening and you're selling shovels. So suddenly your business is going to start like, you know, growing and growing and growing. If you were selling masks and the COVID happened, then your business is suddenly like 10xing. Mm-hmm. So a lot of things are out of your hands and just dependent on which industry and business you are in.
You said one thing, like people who moves out are morons. So we are, I think we'll fall into that. Like you like that.
We are morons.
We are morons. We moved out from our house. So yeah.
So why do you say so? Like, why do you feel so that people who move out are morons?
How old are you right now? You're maybe 19 years old, right?
I'm 20. He's 23.
23.
How much are you guys paying to live by yourself?
Not.
Some disconsiderable amount, yeah.
So, if you were to live with your family, you would have that money with you, right?
True.
And you could use that for a business or for investments or something, right?
True.
Are you getting any benefit by living alone in the sense that?
I have much more time to like invest in my stuff.
Are you sure about that? Because people who live alone typically have less time because you have to do things like cooking, cleaning, etc.
Interesting.
My case is different. I will tell you later, but like, okay. I'm getting your point.
So you have lesser time when you live alone because you have to take care of basic household things. And you
have more expenses.
More expenses, exactly.
But if I have to say, I don't think it was a time equation for me. It was like they didn't want me to do things I wanted to do.
That's a different question.
I mean, like if you were living in like some kind of prison, then it makes sense to live alone. But if you have a supportive family that doesn't like get in your way, then it makes sense to live with them. Especially of the fact that if your parents are older, you can take care of them.
True.
And yeah, I mean, of course, this assumes that your parents don't like prevent you from doing something, or you know, some parents are like that, you know, where they're very hard people to be around, and I empathize with your situation. But in the general case where it is not so, it is you're spending more money and you have less time. And this is the most critical part of your life, right? Like when you're 20 to 30, this is the part which determines the direction of the rest of your life. So if you waste this time and you waste the money you have here, it will be very detrimental for you for the rest of your life. For example, if you were living with your family and let's say that your family is supportive, you can start a business in your free time. Your mom will do the cooking and everything. She'll take care of your, you know,
you'll get good food.
You get good nutrition. Exactly. Your clothes will be washed and you can use the extra time to start a business. Maybe down the line, that business would be really successful. In fact, that's kind of how I started all of my businesses, right? It was just started in my free time. Like even the one that you're speaking to right now, my persona as Life Math Money, it was started in my free time. It was supposed to be a hobby. If you take another of my businesses, it is, you know, teachyourselfcrypto.com. I'm not sure if you're aware of it, but it's a crypto course that we created.
And it's
available on the internet. That was also done in my free time. And everything...
The free one?
Yeah, the free one. I mean, the course itself is free, but you can pay for a certificate. And we've sold about 500-600 certificates so far in a few months.
Oh, okay. That's good.
Yeah, so we sell like a certificate for $20, you know, USA. My point is that you have more time, you have more energy because you have less things to worry about. And you have more money. And isn't that what you need when you are at this age? So it's really dumb to move out, of course. And this is just my opinion. You know, I grew up in a conservative Hindu family in India. So I think it's not right to leave your parents alone at an old age. It's just not the right thing to do. They looked after you when you were young. So you should look after them.
I think it is. This tweet is one of the best example of like the things you say, like, you said, like, okay, people who move out are morons, but the underlying ideas, just don't move out for the sake of moving out.
If you have a legitimate reason, you know, let's say that I have friends who are not from a city, they live in a village and they have to move out for better
job.
Economic opportunity. Yeah.
Job. Yeah.
So that makes sense to me. I understand that. But if, you know, people will move out just for the sake of moving out, they've been watching all these Western shows and apparently if you don't move out, you're a loser. Like, are you sure about that?
It's not easy.
Makes sense.
Exactly. It doesn't make sense. I mean, if you're calling someone a loser and the loser makes like 40 times as much money as you do, he's making
more You're the loser. Okay, just to again playing the devil's advocate. Don't you think moving out on your own and living alone will actually teach you a lot more than living with your parents? I mean, being dependent on your parents.
That is true in situations where you are dependent on your parents for authority, in the sense that you do what your parents tell you. Like if your mom says do this, then you do that.
In basically, that you case, have no decision power, basically.
Yeah, you have no decision power. In that case, when you start living alone, you have decision power for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And if that is not your case, if you are making your own decisions, then it just like moving out and, you know, doing extra work for no reason. See, I'll tell you one. I'll give you like an analogy for this, okay?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, sometimes guys will go to something like, they'll go to like some, you know, have you heard that, you know, work in silence, move out for 6 months, disappear and come back?
Yeah. Instagram quote or something.
It's a popular Instagram quote and it works, but who does it work for? It works for people who have no decision power themselves. Okay, let's say I moved to Thailand. The only difference it would make for me is that I now live in Thailand. But that's my biggest thing. But if someone is like completely dependent on their family for decisions and they move to Thailand for the first time, now suddenly they have like a lot of different things they're taking care of and it's a completely new experience for them. And you know, the typical Thai woman is like jumping on them, man. So it's for them, it's a completely different thing. And for them, the experience is actually very valuable. But if you live somewhat independently and have your own decision making, you decide what you do, etc., it really is, there's no difference.
Okay, a very parallel question, tangential question. Okay. Why do you have so much like great analogies like about everything? Like, it's come from writing, it come from experience. Like, what do you think like is the source of it?
I will say that I typically think about my opinions a lot of the times and I don't just say them on the fly. But yeah, they just come to me. This particular one is taken from this guy called Andrew Tate, who I happened to like watch a video of, and he was talking about
we're talking.
So this particular one was, I think I heard from Andrew Tate. I will give him credit for it.
No, there was a good, I told my friend, I told my roommate, okay, I'm getting Life Math Money on the podcast. He was somewhere, and he said, India ka Andrew Tate.
I don't agree with that because I'm not like Andrew Tate at all, right? Like Andrew Tate is a very edgy person who's very successful, of course, but I will say I'm more of a businessman than a personality on the internet.
If you think you're not edgy, you are not reading your comments enough, like seriously.
No, I'm not edgy in the sense that, you know, it's one thing to see when Andrew Tate is edgy, he has his own personality while being edgy, right? Like he's like very in your face and, you know, you're a loser if you don't listen to me type of thing. But I'm not like that. You know, I just do my thing. I don't get into fights with people for no reason.
You just block them.
So Andrew Tate, like, I respect Andrew Tate a lot for what he has accomplished, of course. And I'm not like criticizing him, but I'm just saying that Andrew Tate and I are not the same in any significant way, except for the fact that we're both on the internet.
Okay.
Like Andrew Tate is someone who will like, if he has cars and he like, okay, I have cars and I'm successful, versus I don't even have, you know, a pretty car and I could buy one, but there's no use for it. So I have a regular car.
You are less likely to like shove it on someone's face, like what color is your Bugatti and stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. If I lived in Romania, I might change. But for now, I don't see the advantage of it.
You said a very great thing about the like the haters thing. Like the first rule of handling social media mob is to never apologize to social media mob.
Yeah, it makes them crazier, right? Like, you know, if they think that you're weak, then they want apologies and everything, you know. And first of all, people who are in mobs, they don't care about you. They've never come across your content before. They are just haters. And you're pandering to haters at the cost of your own audience. And it makes the haters even bolder. Now they want like blood. They've tasted blood. Now they will destroy you. So if the first rule of social media is to not care about hate and ignore the mob can't do anything. They're a bunch of like 20-year-old, 30-year-old idiots making like $1,000 a month or something stupid like that. And they're just like, you know, oh, this is misogynistic. Oh, yeah. Like, dude, have you had a look at yourself?
Okay.
So it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. But these guys typically seem to think that they can dictate what other people can and can't say and can and can't do. And it's you know, I'll give you an analogy now that you say it. Let's say a fat guy comes to you and this guy's really, really obese. And you're here eating like, you know, a protein shake or something. And he's like, oh no, you can't have protein. Protein is bad for your kidneys. Like, you would look at this person and laugh. That's what all these haters are. Like, they are typically people who have accomplished nothing in their life. They have nothing to show for what they've done. But they somehow feel qualified enough to tell you what you need to do. And this isn't a situation where I'm asking them to tell me. They're like coming and shoving it in your face. So all I can do is laugh at them.
Have you ever put out a tweet in which you have got a, like a really good reply? Like, it's not just shouting or something. It's a really good reply and it really made
like the criticism is good, actually. Like, the take is good.
It happens sometimes, but typically it's because the person understood the tweet in a different way. Or, you know, the nature of Twitter is that you can only type out 280 characters, right?
So you can't
really capture nuance. Like, as you just discussed, you know, some of my tweets, they're talking about one side of certain things. And people will then point out the other side. And I'm aware of the other side, but this is Twitter. Yeah. I can't, like,
You can't give enough context.
So typically it happens because of that. But I have had a lot of good conversations on Twitter. In fact, I've met some business partners from Twitter.
Okay.
And we've done like a lot of business together after that. And a lot of people on Twitter are really smart.
Have you met someone from Twitter?
Yeah.
And has it, but like,
they're also like, anonymous. So.
okay. They're also anonymous. So okay, like everyone. on a Gmeet or something, when you say meet them or like offline?
I think I was in their city once.
Okay.
So I decided to meet them. I'll tell you what, most of the time, in my experience at least, the people who are on Twitter and they're, you know, they've been creating stuff on Twitter for a long time, they tend to be really, really intelligent. Like, I was honestly shocked, and I find that to be true in a lot of cases where Twitter is the best way to meet more people. Meet really smart people.
Okay. What do you do when you're not talking about business, men, women, marriage, and everything? Like, what do you do to chill down? Like, you know, normal.
I don't normally talk about men, women, marriage, right? Like, that's just sometimes on Twitter when it tends to blow up, right? Okay. I think I would say like 80-90% of my tweets are unrelated to that topic. They're about productivity or business, etc.
Okay.
But typically, I'll lift weights, I'll go out, I'll go trekking, hiking, and things of that sort. Most of my hobbies are very physical. Lifting weights, etc. I like to write.
You know what you mean.
What?
No. So like, do you go trek on a weekly basis or like monthly basis? How much you travel? Like, are you a traveler or nomad or something?
No. I don't. That's not possible if you're running a lot of businesses. It's just not. But
how many businesses are you currently?
I will say about 4.
Okay. This one question we had, this, did you have any business that, you know, you thought would not make significant money, but it actually makes a lot of money?
Life math money.
And the opposite?
Yeah, the opposite. Where you thought it will make a lot of money, but it did not make a lot of money.
Those are shut down.
Okay. Were it like ebooks or courses or something like that, or something different?
No, they were into my affiliate marketing line, but they weren't as profitable and they were taking up way too much time and research. Those are the ones that are not doing as well.
So when you say life math money makes a lot of money for you,
lot of money, but I expected it to make no money whatsoever, and it's making some money, so that's not bad.
Significant money. So is it just the ebooks or is it the something else, some course?
It's mostly I have 2 main products, but also a lot of affiliate revenue because I recommend other people's products that I like.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So affiliate marketing actually works, you're telling me?
Affiliate marketing is the easiest way to make money on the internet if you are willing to do the work.
Okay.
What's the initial work?
I mean, it's traffic. Maybe generating traffic and getting the right product, I assume.
Exactly. Let's say that there's a product you're selling or someone else is selling and you have a deal with them. Let's say that if Mitesh, you are manufacturing perfume and I'm like, okay, I'm going to bring you clients for people who will purchase a perfume and I'm going to take 30% or 40% of the sales price.
Of the revenue.
So of the revenue, yeah. And now what I do is I bring in traffic. Okay, we set up a sales page using a link that makes sure that if someone purchases from this link, we will both know that, you know, someone purchased from this link.
From this link. And this link is your link. And that's why you will get the share.
That, so this link will mark that this customer came from me. And in an affiliate marketing structure, you bring in the traffic. Let's say that you are running ads on Facebook. So you run ads on Facebook, you bring people in who buy this perfume, and then you get your commission. So let's say that you sell, you spend $1,000 on ads, and you make $5,000 in sales, and the commission is 30%. So you make $1,500 in commissions, you spend $1,000, and your profit is $500. Now, the advantage of an affiliate business, affiliate marketing business, is that you don't have to come up with a product or do any delivery. You just have to bring the customer. So you can move on really fast. Okay, let's say that you find that perfumes don't sell at all. Now you've not put in any investment in actually creating a perfume line. So you can just abandon this and I'm not going
to
sell.
You can just go to some different product.
Yeah, I'm going to start selling pants instead. Or I'm going to start selling caps. Or I'm going to start selling something else. I'm going to start selling air conditioners. And what you will typically find is that you will have some successes that are so successful that you're going to be like, okay, so this particular type of pant really, really sells on the internet. And I'm already bringing in customers. So now I can go to China and, you know, get...
You can manufacture it yourself.
You don't have to manufacture it yourself. You can go and go to China and get and it, buy it. Yeah, source it. Put your own brand on it. Make sure, you know, divert your traffic to your own brand and keep all the profits. So I would say that affiliate marketing is one of the best starter businesses when you don't have your own product. It lets you test a lot of ideas out.
And it makes sense when you said that, you know, you should build an audience. So then that audience will actually help you with the affiliate marketing because now you have something to sell.
Yeah. If you have an audience, you don't have to run ads, right? So you don't have to put in $1,000 just to try something out.
Makes
which can be a lot of money for some people. You know, some people can't afford to lose $1,000 and it means something to them. So for them, it makes sense to have an audience first.
I mean, if you're testing things, obviously $1,000 is a lot. So you cannot lose $1,000. What if it does not work? But if you're an audience, you can always try links.
I'm not sure if... See, most people who are in affiliate marketing, the $1,000 to $500 is something they use to try. Like, you know, you don't expect it to work. Like, it almost always doesn't work. When you like work on the ad copy, you find that, you know, so first of all, just to clear up something, when you run
this is some, I think there is some problem with your mic, Harsh. Is it me?
Oh, I think it's your internet connection is weak.
Tishar, can you check?
Same problem.
I think your mic is not connected.
Okay, can you just repeat the last part?
Yeah. Oh, sorry. So what I'm saying is, suppose that you are running ads for $1,000, and you only sold $1,000 worth of perfume. You will still make $300. You are not likely to lose all of your money. You will lose a portion of it, which you expect to lose when you are entering a new industry for the first time. Because you know nothing about the customer, you're just guessing a bit, and you're looking at what other people are, what ads other people are running, and you're trying to like, you know, take inspiration. But yeah, so I would say most people typically will put in $100, expecting to lose all of it, just to test something out.
Makes sense.
Got it. I think this one tweet you did, like, let's go back to men for a second. Like, most CEOs are men for the same reason most homeless people are men.
Yeah, so this is because men tend to be more variable, right? Like, men take extreme risks, both in life and in business, and extreme risks have extreme rewards or extreme penalties. So you can end up homeless or you can end up really rich. And women don't do that. Women tend to like stick around in the center where the average woman will do better than the average man, but at the extremes, you know, the worst situation in life will typically be faced by men, and the best situations in life will also be men. It's simply they're more spread out. If you were to make like a curve, you know, the curve for men will they would both be bell curves, but men's curve would be flatter at the center and you know, we'll have fatter tails, versus for women, which would be like a taller bell curve.
So basically your example would be a lot of CEOs are men, but also a lot of bricklayers are also men.
Exactly. Something like that.
Bell curve is crazy, bro. Once you understand the bell curve, you're like,
you can give people insults without them realizing that. You can tell them that you're at the top of the bell curve, and they're like, hey, he said I'm on the top.
You said ki, like, the key to happiness and sanity for men is to always keep building something. Business,
yes.
Knowledge, or anything.
If you are a man, and you're doing nothing in life, you will become so frustrated and unhappy, and it's going to happen really, really fast. If for a man to be sane, he has to be building something. He has to be working on some project or the other. He has to either be building his career or his physical health or a business or something else. He can't just sit around. It just doesn't work for men. Like, we are meant to move.
What's your
even if I like, I don't think it's the best example, but when I do freelancing, the worst thing, there are two things that happen, two worst things that happen. First of all, I have like too much work. And the second thing is I have no work. And the no work things give me more anxiety than the whole work thing. Every time.
You leave it extremes, basically.
Too much work is a good problem, right?
Too much.
I have anxiety of like too much work, but I still have like more worst anxiety when I don't really have any.
You could say that's related, but what I mean to say is a bit different in the sense that, like, if you, as a guy, you can't just sit and do nothing for extended periods of time. Like, you need to have a goal that you are trying to accomplish. Like, this is the key to happiness, because if a guy doesn't have something he's working on, then they typically start becoming depressed and sad and unhappy and anxious.
So isn't it true for like all people? That was the concept.
I think it's truer for men. It's truer for men.
How can a woman sit and do nothing and not be depressed?
See, for a woman, biologically, she will have a kid. And she will always have something to do, someone to look after. But that is not the case for guys, right?
Makes sense. Okay.
Like, you're not constantly cooking for the kid, making sure it's happy and your welfare, etc., etc. And if you are not building something, then your life is going to be really, really empty. This is despite you having money.
Despite having money.
If you take the story of the Buddha, it's something similar, right? Where this guy is a prince and he has all the money in the world, but he's still unhappy. And I would say he's unhappy because he's doing nothing, he's building nothing, he isn't experiencing anything.
But when he sees suffering,
he goes out, probably.
Yeah, I think he goes out once. I'm not sure.
What he builds in the story?
Meaning of life? Meaning of life, probably.
I don't know. Like, I don't think it's a good example.
Good example, okay.
Fair enough. No, what I'm trying to say is that even if you have a lot of money and a lot of physical things, you can still be very frustrated. And Buddha is like an example of that, right? He was very frustrated and he kind of sneaks out of his castle, right? Like, he wasn't like going on. He snuck out and that's when he saw suffering. Yeah. But why did he snuck out despite him having all the money in the world? Because money by itself doesn't give you any purpose.
This is a good example for the first part of the equation. Like, you just can't be laying around.
Yeah.
And as I'm a writer and I have to really ask this question, like, how did you improve your writing over years?
It improved by itself. I would say practice. I just kept writing a lot. And over time, it just kept getting better.
So you didn't take any course or anything?
No, I have not.
You have a voice coach, right? So why did you get a voice coach?
So the reason I got a voice coach was simply because when I was like, most of my audience is not Indian, right? And they have trouble understanding the Indian accent. So in India, like, you know, we think that the Indian accent is the simplest and the most clear accent.
It's the hardest, I think.
But when you talk to people outside of India, for them, Indian accent is hard to understand. And it also sounds very funny. And if your accent is hard to understand and you are building an online business, let's say with iFinance Money, you're trying to build a brand and trying to grow it. What's the worst thing that can happen to you? The worst thing is that you're, what you're saying is difficult for people to understand. So you have
to communicate. You can't communicate.
Yeah. But how much time, like from how much time you have a like voice coach?
I think it's been about 10 months. But yeah, I don't like hire her every day, right? Sometimes I'm doing it, sometimes I'm not, sometimes I'm traveling.
Is it like is like a therapist or something? You just book a session with a voice coach?
Yeah. It's not like a therapist. Like, she isn't giving me therapy.
No. What I meant is you just book a session like randomly once in a while.
Yeah.
Okay.
But and still, what
do they
months.
Do exactly? Like, I don't get what do they teach? What is the voice
so right now? Right now, I'm learning. So right now, I'm speaking with you in an Indian accent because, you know, your audience is Indian. But if I was like on my own show where most people listening to this will not be Indian, I will speak a bit more like this, where it's more understandable to a Western accent, where they don't have to process what you're saying.
Actually, I was surprised at the start. Like, your accent is very different from the last video I saw you were with Shreya. And I had a question over that also. Like, it's been 10 months you're doing this like regularly, but yeah, you're still doing that. But even still in the comments, everyone has this complaint, like your accent is not good.
Actually, that's not true. The typical person who has that complaint is Indian people.
Okay, like, you know, that makes sense.
Where they find it very awkward, right? Where they're like, okay, so for them, it's neither an Indian accent, but neither it's a Western accent, somewhere in the middle. And they find it really annoying and they tend to complain a lot about it. But I've had lots of Westerners, and you know, that's my primary audience here. Like, they send me messages that yours is the only accent I can understand. See, I'll give you an analogy for this. Let's say that someone is speaking Hindi, but in an English accent. That is going to take effort for you to understand. Like, have you, like, if you Google this, okay, you'll find a video of Trump saying "Ab ki baar Trump Sarkar," but he's saying it in, you know, a Western accent, and it sounds like this, like, you know, "Ab ki baar Trump Sarkar."
Donald Trump.
Yeah, it doesn't like, you can't understand it unless you're paying attention. So that's what happens to people who are abroad when they are listening to an Indian accent and they are not Indian. You know, for them, they have to pay attention and they have to listen. But who, you know, when people are listening to podcasts and YouTube videos, they're not sitting and, you know, paying a lot of attention, right? Maybe they're like washing the dishes or doing something else. So it is your job as the creator to make it as easy as possible for your audience to understand what you're saying. And that is the Western American accent, you could say. But of course, it kind of like really, really pisses off Indians. Like, they become, they're like, this is forced, et cetera, but they don't get the point. Like, if you look at actual statistics, you know, YouTube gives you the amount of minutes watched in a video. When I speak in a more Western accent, the amount of minutes watched is like much higher because people don't have to put in any effort to understand what you're saying because the audience is not Indian or like primarily not Indian.
Okay. The attention goes up, basically.
Yeah, not just attention. Like, you know, people are not coming to YouTube to put in work to understand someone. They just want some easy content to consume. And if the communication itself is very accented and hard to understand, then they are likely to click away, especially with YouTube, because there are so many videos they can watch and yours is not the only one.
Okay, this is a random last quick question. When you go on calls with your clients, do you go with Life Map Money or do you go with your actual face?
I don't do face calls. I just call them from the phone.
Oh, okay. So it's still anonymous. You stay anonymous for your business also.
It depends, you know. More or less, you can say.
Okay.
Okay. Trust factor.
Maybe, okay. Take
care. Thanks a lot, Harsh. Like, okay. It was great. Like, to us and like, yeah, sure.
I hope your audience enjoys it and learns something.
Yep.
I hope they will do. And also comment shit around.
So did this touch.